The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com, teenvogue.com, and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from kidspiritonline.com, Literature from the Past to the Present. This article was written by Lavi Saad on November 29th. Fictional literature has always been important to society. It provides us with a way to spread culture, a way to express emotions, and, of course, a source of entertainment. However, literature has evolved immensely over the centuries. In comparison to works of older eras, today's literature is quite different due to drastic shifts in societal standards, ideas, living conditions, and morals. These shifts have altered both the content and characters found in important works, since current beliefs heavily influence the popular media of their specific time period. We can track this evolution through what are considered some of the best novels of the 19th to the 21st centuries. A comparison of popular novels from these time periods displays the evolution of literature from the past to the present through historical development. The 19th century is divided into two literary periods, which are the Romantic and Victorian periods. The Romantic period lasted from roughly 1798 to 1837. Authors of this era were fascinated with the beautiful and the grotesque, and were also heavily influenced by political events such as the French Revolution. The French Revolution was a rebellion against the French monarchy that was full of passion, anger, and was driven by a demand for change, specifically for a demand related to an elimination of tyranny. Romantics were also especially interested in human emotion and a sense of excitement related to the natural world and an artist's creativity. In addition to this, the Romantic period was preceded by the Age of Reason, also known as the Enlightenment, which began in the late 17th century and ended in the early 19th century. During the Enlightenment, a new wave of knowledge had spread around Europe, and ideas related to rationalism and progressivism were considered to be new ways of thinking at the time. New principles are often incorporated into the media of their time period, so popular literature usually reflects the ideas of the time period it was written in. One example of romantic ideals in literature can be observed in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. In this novel, Victor Frankenstein, a young and passionate scientist who is curious about the principles of life, crafts a creation out of various dead body parts and brings it to life. Victor's creation is hideous, but it has the capacity to think as well as any human can. As soon as he completes his experiment, however, Victor finds himself disgusted with what he has made. The reader learns that the creation only wants love, but understands that it will never be loved because of the way it looks. Out of spite and frustration, the creation kills Victor's brother and the rest of his family over the course of the novel. While the creation is painted as a monster, Shelley masterfully crafts her characters so that it is impossible to decide who really is the villain, a creation who kills out of frustration, or a creator who is cruel and refuses to give his creation love. This relates to the Romantic period and its principles, a fascination with beauty and ugliness. Victor's initial obsession with nature and the fundamentals of life are also related to common themes of interest in this area. Finally, Shelley's novel can be linked to current world events during the 19th century, since a variety of rebellions emerged during this era, and the novel explores a rebellion against one's creator. The Romantic period lasted until the mid-19th century, and its conclusion marked the beginning of the Victorian era of literature. This period of time correlates with Queen Victoria's rule of England. During this time, industrialism flourished and was a competitive new market, and many countries were transitioning from agricultural societies into rapidly expanding industrial powerhouses. Additionally, ideas from the Age of Reason, such as equality for all and individualism, grew increasingly popular. According to Eastern Connecticut State University, a major difference between Victorian and Romantic literature is that during the Victorian era, the steam printing press was developed and helped make the production of texts far cheaper than before. Because of this, all civilians could access literature, and authors had a wider audience to appeal to. An example of the wide appeal of Victorian literature is A Christmas Carol, written by Charles Dickens. This novel depicts the life of Ebenezer Scrooge, an old man who despises the idea of Christmas and happiness. During the novel, Scrooge is visited in the night by ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, and each of these presences provides Scrooge with a new perspective. Suddenly, after numerous strange encounters with these ghosts, he returns to his bed safely and decides to take advantage of a new opportunity to redeem himself by finally participating in Christmas festivities. Since an increase in book production due to mass market steam printing allowed lower classes to afford books, Victorian authors were encouraged to include a more diverse array of socioeconomic classes in their stories to appeal to a larger pool of readers. Dickinson's work focuses on the lower class, since many of the supporting characters in the story live in poverty. While Frankenstein and A Christmas Carol clearly reflect the societal norms of their respective eras, we can still observe how contemporary literature clearly represents the values of the 21st century as well. For instance, The Hunger Games, a trilogy written by Suzanne Collins, was inspired by contemporary events like the war in Iraq, as well as historical figures such as the Roman gladiators. In the first book of this series, Collins describes protagonist Katniss Everdeen as a girl who lives in a dystopian world with her sister and mother. Katniss's world is divided into 12 districts, and every year, 2 children from each district are selected to participate in the Hunger Games, a fight to the death. When her sister Primrose is selected as a tribute, Katniss volunteers to go in her place. Peeta Mellark, a boy from Katniss's district, is also selected as a tribute, and the reader watches a romantic relationship surrounded by tragedy unfold between Katniss and Peeta. Betrayals and sacrifices often occur in this novel, which demonstrates both the selfishness of mankind and the human instinct to fight when forced to. This novel's fictional setting reflects the experimentalism of contemporary literature. As demonstrated, the thematic evolution of popular literature clearly reflects the evolution of societal values. The societal norms of the Romantic, Victorian, and current literary periods are displayed evidently throughout novels written during each time period. As time continues onward, literature will continue to change as the values of society evolve. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, Politics Throughout the Generations, The Changing Views of Each Generation. This article was written by Ethan Bowie on December 23rd. Today, we are engaged in a final, all-out battle between communistic atheism and Christianity. The date was February 9, 1950. Senator Joseph McCarthy was delivering his notable speech entitled Enemies from Within in front of a crowd in Wheeling, West Virginia. McCarthy's speech and his character as a staunch anti-communist politician, as well as a United States senator from Wisconsin, will forever remain famous or infamous in American government and politics, depending on your perspective. But fast-forwarding to today, we are hard-pressed to find anybody speaking like McCarthy, let alone a young person from our generation. Switching on the television, we are no longer bombarded with calls against communism, the Soviet Union, and Red China, but instead with calls to action for racial justice and freedom of speech. Just 70 years ago, during the Second Red Scare, our country was focused on eradicating communism, socialism, Marxism, and the like from America. Just 15 years later, there were massive protests against President Lyndon B. Johnson's decision to send American troops to Vietnam, an obscure Southeast Asian country, to combat the North Vietnamese communist forces threatening to launch an invasion and establish a socialistic government. Eventually, in 1973, during the presidency of Richard Nixon, intense public pressure and scrutiny led to a withdrawal of American troops from Vietnamese soil, leading to the fall of Saigon on April 30, 1975, formally ending the Vietnam War with a North Vietnamese communist victory. This drastic shift, mainly due to the coming of age of the young generation at the time, within two decades since the Second Red Scare, marked one of the greatest transitions in the American geopolitical landscape. Today, the political rhetoric in the United States has become centered on social justice, activism, freedom of speech, abortion rights, as well as other topics that would never have generated a meaningful discussion less than a century ago. So as the once radical baby boomers have aged over the decades, how has America changed throughout the years? Throughout the generations, how has America become an increasingly politically polarized country? How do the views of young Americans today differ from those of older citizens who once believed differently? To answer these questions, we must explore the political trends of recent generations leading back to the Silent Generation, which saw the rise of modern politics in American society. Modern partisanship. Political polarization and partisanship have become ingrained in our modern culture. According to the Pew Research Center, strong political partisanship in Americans has increased from 10% to 21% within the last two decades alone. Additionally, ideological thinking is now much more closely aligned with partisanship than in the past. As a result, ideological overlap between the Republicans and Democrats has diminished. Today, 92% of Republicans are to the right of the median Democrat, and 94% of Democrats are to the left of the median Republican. So, what can explain the change from just the past two decades alone? Let's use a critical figure in modern American politics to explain this ideological shift. During the first year of Donald Trump's presidency, 36% of Gen Xers and just 27% of millennials approved of his job performance, compared to 46% of silence and 44% of boomers. Millennials consistently remain as the most dominant leftist and democratic adult generation in America, not including Generation Z, as some of our peers have not yet reached adulthood. The same intergenerational division regarding Trump's presidency is also reflected in other issues commonly dividing the two major political parties today. Our country's population trends can be seen in the millennial generation, which has become the most racially diverse by so far, with over 40% belonging to a minority race. Our population continues to become even more diverse, with Generations Z and Alpha now entering the scene. Perhaps the changing population trends and racial diversity in our younger generations, compared to the vastly different monocultural society exposed to our preceding generations, has played a part in the shifting of the geopolitical landscape and the intergenerational differences existing between the older and younger generations. However, If we closely examine past trends, it can be quickly discovered that the generational behavior of our younger generations is not uncommon, nor is it unprecedented. Political trends in preceding generations. When referencing the baby boomer generation today, we rarely think of them as a liberal generation. Yet, in 1969, far more in the 18 to 29-year-old age cohort, the front end of the baby boom, called themselves Democrats, 35%, than Republicans, 21%. A decade later, when they were 28 to 39 years old, their identification with the Democratic Party over the GOP was even stronger, 45% to 19% in Gallup's surveys. However, beginning in 1980, they began to take a more conservative approach as they came of age and started their own families, cementing their family-oriented and religious approach to life, values more commonly espoused by the modern Republican Party. During the massive counterculture movement of the 1960s and 70s, also known as the hippie movement, the baby boomer generation became known by older generations, such as the silent generation, for being rebellious and unconventional. Indeed, the boomers were much more liberal on religion, women's rights, and racial issues compared to their parents. However, in the 1986 Time poll, 64% of the baby boomers polled said they had become more conservative since the 1960s, highlighting a major shift between their views from before, during the height of the hippie movement. When exploring these trends throughout our older generations, it can become easier to develop an understanding of the differences between our generation and theirs. It can also help to explain the shift away from the Red Scares of the early to the mid-20th century. As the dialogue has gradually shifted away from abolition to civil rights to social justice throughout the nearly 250 years of our nation's existence, it can be hard to predict what will happen to our generation and our political views in the future. What will happen next? Analyzing trends and conclusion. It can certainly be difficult for some of us to understand why our elders act the way that they do and believe in the political systems that they continue to believe in. However, the baby boomer and silent generations were faced with many hardships that are mostly now irrelevant and obsolete to our generation. Coming of age in times of war when drafts were common, our elderly generations endured hardships during the Second World War and Vietnam War, either overseas serving our country or at home protesting the draft. It is also important for us to remember that our baby boomer generation was responsible for much of the progress of the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, leading to significant changes in American society that are still present and evolving today. To conclude, I would like to include a quote whose theme many of us have heard before, and one that seems to come out of the mouth of every older person. Children, they have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents and tyrannize their teachers. Children are now tyrants. Can you guess who spoke these famous words? This quote, which could have been written by almost any older person, was actually written by Socrates, a famous Greek philosopher who lived from 470 to 399 BCE, over 2,600 years ago. When comparing the shifting geopolitical landscape and the evolving political beliefs of each generation, we can see that most generations tend to shift towards the ideological right with time. So before you criticize our elders, take a moment and reflect on the fact that you could be very different just a couple of decades from now. Concluding thoughts. to understand why Senator Joseph McCarthy is viewed as a polarizing political figure today, despite his success in the promotion of the Red Scares during the 20th century, we can reference the shifting tone towards a racial inequality. While the abolition of slavery was a major discussion topic in the late 18th to mid-19th century, it has gradually shifted to become a topic of the past, a page from the history books. What was once a major talking point gradually transitioned to a discussion on civil rights and social justice, an issue that continues to dominate our modern political landscape. Similarly, discussions around communism have seemingly become more irrelevant among our younger generations due to a variety of factors that impacted the geopolitical landscape over time. These same factors contributed to the abolition of slavery in the United States, the 20th Amendment granting women the right to vote, and the 26th Amendment granting all citizens 18 years of age and older sovereignty. So, as we reflect on the intergenerational differences of the present, let's all come to a mutual understanding of history's tendency to repeat itself. Someone who was once as relevant as Joseph McCarthy in the fight against communism has now become a figure in the history textbooks. Someone who was once as relevant as Socrates in Greek and Western philosophy has now become a figure in the history textbooks. Someone who was once as relevant as Martin Luther King Jr. or Rosa Parks in the fight against racial segregation and Jim Crow has now become a figure in the history books. Someone who was once as relevant as Abraham Lincoln in the fight against slavery has now become a figure in the history books. To conclude, we should all recognize that generations, as well as the people belonging to them, change over time. To coexist peacefully with our elder generations, we must learn to come to a mutual respect and understanding of their beliefs and traditions, whether they be similar or different to ours. I leave with a call for peace. Respect your elders, and perhaps one day that respect may turn into respect for yourself. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Z-Way interviewed George Santos. Here's how he answered, or didn't. And this article was written by Fortessa Latifi on December 18th. After teasing it on social media over the last few weeks, Z-Way, the comedian known for her barbed interviews with unself-aware figures from all walks of life, took on George Santos, the former New York representative expelled from Congress on December 1st, after being charged with conspiracy, wire fraud, identity theft, and credit card fraud, among other things. Santos's wayward ways and immediate transition to Cameo have made him into a bit of a meme, especially among Gen Z and millennials, despite his transphobic views and support for anti-LGBTQ+ laws, or his seemingly pathological lying about things like his mother working in the World Trade Center on 9/11. So, an interview with Z-Way, who is known for baiting her guests into admitting their faults, shortcomings, and biases, felt like kind of an internet no-brainer. The day after Santos was kicked out of Congress, Z-Way tweeted at him saying he'd be an iconic guest, and it only took the former congressman until the next day to respond, "Let's do it." We still haven't decided if these two are a match made in hell or heaven, but regardless, here's what you missed on the Z-Way versus Santos showdown. 1. When asked to identify a list of civil rights era leaders, who the hell is James Baldwin? Harvey Milk? I have no clue who that is. 2. Republicans and Democrats are a swampy, slimy people selling this country down a river, insisted Santos. Following this proclamation, Z-Way asked if he could name specific people in Congress who are frauds, to which Santos replied, "They're all frauds." Ziwei then pushed him to name names, and he demurred before she listed a group of people for him to weigh in on, fraud-wise. According to Santos, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz are not frauds, and Kevin McCarthy, Lindsey Graham, Bob Menendez, and Dan Goldman are. Take that as you will. 3. In response to a question about how many black friends he has, "I have plenty of black friends. I have too many to count. Seriously, I don't see color. I grew up in Queens." 4. Santos apparently thinks the country needs more independent thinkers. Ziwei asked, "Like Jill Stein?" Santos, "Jill Stein is a Russian asset, according to Hillary Clinton, and I believe Hillary on that one. I'm an asset of no one." 5. Ziwei asked how many people in Congress Santos could beat in a lip-sync battle. He said all of them. If he had to choose a song, he'd choose "I Will Survive" because it's cliché. Why not? 6. Gen Z progressives are the future, and they need to slay the boots house down. 7. If a politician's mouth is moving on Capitol Hill, they're lying to you. "I'm not a politician. Never was, never will be." Yes, he certainly was a politician. 8. When asked if he supported a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war, Santos said, "I hate war. Peace is the way to go." He went on to say that he does not support a ceasefire. 9. Ziwei asked Santos if he would rather shoplift from Sephora or Ulta, and he responded, "Neither. I don't do petty crimes." In her trademark quick fashion, she quipped, "White collar." He looked stumped. 10. In a moment that immediately set off internet chatter, Santos reversed Ziwei's footing somewhat when she asked him if he was like Tinkerbell. Would he disappear if people stopped clapping? He said he wouldn't. "What could we do to get you to go away?" Ziwei asked. He answered for all of us, "Stop inviting me to your gigs." Which, like, good point. "The lesson is stop inviting you places," Ziwei said, and he answered quickly, "But you can't. People want the content." 11. Finally, Santos. "I think I do have empathy. I believe I do. I couldn't define it." We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.